With infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Why don't you ask me what it feels like to be a freak?
Greetings, and you are listening to Savage Science Radio here at Jackalope 105 FM, and I'm your host, Tracy Savage. Let's have some tunes to start tonight off.
Well, I can't stand to look at you now. This revelation's out of my hands. Still, I can't bear the thought of you now. This complication's leaving me scared. Stay when you think you want me. Pray when you need advice. Hey, keep your sickness off me. Try to get through. Blame all your weakness on me. Shame that I'm so contrite. Hey, keep your fingers off me. Why can't I get through? You think you have the best of intentions. I cannot shake the taste of blood. Myself, this liberation seemingly rare. And I can't stand the taste of your mouth. This sublimation's out of my hands. You stay 'cause you think you want me. Pray when you need advice. Hey, keep your sickness off me.
I'm trying to get through.
This week, Adam and Cosmos News. Well, there's been a cosmic burst source sort of figured out, I guess. They think that new simulations affirm that two dead stars merging into a black hole can shoot out some of the universe's most powerful eruptions. These, quote, short gamma ray bursts, unquote, unleash in under a second the energy that the Milky Way emits in 1 year. The supercomputer simulations that were used was from an international research team who watched two neutron stars spiral into each other and collapse into a black hole surrounded by a donut of material threaded with a super strong magnetic field. As the donut coalesced, the magnetic field reorganized itself, becoming 1,000 times stronger than the star's original fields and forming a pair of funnels that could launch the high energy jets associated with such bursts. Now, these researchers are proposing this in the May 1st issue of Astrophysical Journal Letters. And too darn quiet? Well, let's talk about ETs. Introverted ETs. A researcher has a new suggestion about why it is just so hard to find advanced extraterrestrial life. He thinks they're afraid to advertise. Adrian Kent of the Perimeter Institute for Theoretical Physics in Waterloo, Canada, suggests that intelligent species might reasonably worry about the dangers of self-promotion and incline toward discretion rather than broadcasting their presence. He notes that evolutionary selection tends to extinguish species that conspicuously broadcast their habitat. I guess they don't use Twitter. Kent posted his study online April 5th at arxiv.org if you want to read more and make comments. And speaking of ET, ET miners, Earth-based observers might be able to see the evidence of asteroid mining by distant civilizations, an international team proposes. If an advanced civilization depleted resources at its own planet and began mining nearby asteroids, the team argues in an upcoming International Journal of Astrobiology that the chemical composition, shape, and size distribution of objects would change in the parent star's debris disk, the dusty disk continually replenished when asteroids and their fragments collide. Now, although such signatures are not unique to mining, they would indicate that a nearby star system should be examined more closely for signs of life. Titan? Well, wind, rain, and erosion can account for all surface features on Saturn's moon Titan with no evidence of icy volcanism. Cold material erupting from beneath the surface, and these are images taken by the Cassini spacecraft and what has been revealing, are being examined. Now, researchers who had thought that some landforms were created by icy volcanism proposed that such activity might provide a supply of liquid water for organisms that would have access to the moon's abundant supply of organic compounds. Now, the lack of volcanism also suggests that Titan's hydrocarbon lakes can't be replenished by an underground source and will dry up perhaps in some 30 million years. And the NASA's have reported this in the April Icarus. And a newly discovered object that has hewed close to Earth's path for at least the last 250,000 years is the largest of only three asteroids with an orbit that resembles a horseshoe as viewed from Earth. Asteroid 2010 SO16 is either a leftover from the formation of the inner planets or a refugee from the main asteroid belt between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter. The object could shed light on planet formation in the inner solar system, according to the researchers at the Armagh Observatory in Northern Ireland, and they reported this in the upcoming monthly notices of Royal Astronomical Society. Well, and it looks like that Europe is now on its own for spacecraft to study black holes and gravitational waves because NASA is pulling out of astrophysics missions. Two proposed space missions to study supermassive black holes and other high-energy phenomena have fallen into NASA's gaping budget hole. Both missions were collaborations between NASA and the European Space Agency, or ESA. When NASA recently determined that it could not come up with its share of funding for the astrophysics research over the next few years, ESA decided it would have to scrap the projects as now envisioned. A third mission planned by NASA alone also appears to be in jeopardy. Now, one of the missions known as LISA, short for Laser Interferometer Space Antenna, would have been the first dedicated space mission to search for gravitational waves or ripples in the space-time predicted by Einstein's theory of general relativity. Now, LISA's design called for three identical spacecraft that would use lasers to detect minute movements of a 2-kilogram gold-platinum alloy cube inside each craft. The tiny motions would be evidence of the passage of a gravitational wave generated by sources such as merging supermassive black holes. Total cost of the mission is estimated at about $2.4 billion, of which NASA's share would have been about $1.5 billion. The other disbanded mission, the roughly $5 billion International X-ray Observatory, would have cost NASA about $3.1 billion and was slated to use a large X-ray mirror to peer through dust and gas clouds to discover and examine some of the universe's earliest supermassive black holes. The X-ray mission would have been a successor of two spacecraft now in orbit, NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory and ESA's XMM Newton Observatory. Now, John Morse, head of NASA's Astrophysics Division, announced the decision to cut funding for both missions during an April 7th teleconference with the NASA Astrophysics Advisory Board. ESA is considering scaled-down versions of these and other missions, and NASA may play a minor role if such a plan goes forward. Although the U.S. President's proposed budget for fiscal year 2010 provides money to continue the designs of LISA and IXO, or EXO, however you want to say that, the projects weren't the top priorities in the last year's National Research Council report on recommended astrophysics missions for the coming decade. Quote, "This is the most exciting time ever in astrophysics, but it coincides with a very challenging time for funding," unquote, says Michael Turner of the University of Chicago, who is a co-author of the council report. He notes that while ESA was eager to collaborate with NASA on EXO, LISA, and LaPlace, which is a mission to Jupiter and its moons, it became clear that NASA's budget wouldn't allow the missions to be ready to fly in the 2020 timeframe that ESA had in mind. They have money now and need to produce good science with it or face a loss of contributions from member states, says Turner. Thus, they are forced into a position of going it alone on less capable versions of these missions. Now, James Ira Thorpe of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, predicts that overall, any design that ESA might propose for a revamped gravitational wave mission, quote, will look a lot like LISA, unquote. He adds that if such a mission is not selected for continued study by ESA, quote, "I would expect the communities in the U.S. and Europe to regroup and propose a LISA-like mission to their respective communities for a future opportunity," unquote. NASA's woes stem from a low budget for a new astrophysics research, exacerbated by a $1.4 billion projected overrun for the James Webb Space Telescope. The JWST overrun, if taken from all astrophysics, would eat up almost all of this money for new things, Turner says. Now, NASA Administrator Charles Bolden has suggested that the Webb Telescope won't launch before 2018, which is 2 years later than recently estimated. To meet that target, NASA would have to postpone the National Research Council's highest priority space mission, the proposed wide-field infrared survey telescope, from a recommended 2020 launch to 2025, notes Alan Boss of the Carnegie Institution for Science in Washington, D.C. At that point, he says, the scientific timelines of the mission to examine dark energy and exoplanets would have waned and support for the mission would have weakened. And now I think it's about time for a music break.
Black hole sun, won't you?
Matter and energy news, a quantum state is teleported, and twisty light, foamy graphene, and all kinds of neat stuff. And beam the cat up! Packets of light that resemble Schrodinger's hypothetical cat, existing in two states at once, both alive and dead, have been successfully teleported from one place to another. Now, this movement of a quantum state accomplished by a team of researchers in Japan and Australia could be useful for sending quantum information quickly and securely. As described in the April 15th issue of Science, the Mr. Scott-style feat destroyed the original quantum state, transmitted the information using entangled light, and recreated it elsewhere. That's pretty exciting. And screwy light... light beams crimped and curled tighter than a prom queen's hairdo may help scientists probe the structures of small molecules in pursuit of new drugs. A molecule with left-handed structure absorbs different amounts of this super chiral light than its mirror image right-handed form. This technique, described in the April 15th issue of Science, is 11 times better at distinguishing these two forms than previous circularly polarized light sources. Researchers at Harvard University made the corkscrew-shaped light by colliding two beams of polarized light rotating in opposite directions. In graphene foam, well, there's an awful lot of work with graphene this year and, well, last year too. A new way to grow multiple layers of carbon from methane gas could lead to flexible, foldable, stretchable electronics. Graphene foam, made of carbon and polymer, conducts electricity a million times better than similar composites grown with other methods, scientists at the Chinese Academy of Sciences reported April 10th in Nature Materials. Their chemical vapor deposition technique avoids the imperfections and impurities that reduce the performance of other approaches to making graphene materials. We'll be looking for more of that. That's a very space age and, wow, science fiction or science fact once again. And speaking of light and, well, computers, scientists are seeing the one-way light. Nonlinear materials are allowing directional discrimination of waves. Now, normally a glass window doesn't care where a ray of light came from, but special kinds of glass or plastic could be a bit pickier. Nonlinear materials could distinguish between the two rays of light coming from opposite directions, say two Italian physicists. Blocking a ray from one direction and allowing an array from the other could be useful for making a one-way street for light. Now, textbook optics prohibits this kind of directional discrimination. Everyday linear materials are governed by the reciprocity theorem, which says that a beam of light coming from the left will pass through and reflect off material in the same way as a beam coming in from the right. But nonlinear materials, which can change as light passes through them, play by different rules. Without nonlinearity, this asymmetry would not be possible, says Giulio Castati, a physicist at the University of Insubria in Como, Italy. A textbook pendulum, for instance, swings at a steady frequency that can be calculated from equations. But a nonlinear pendulum's frequency changes over time in a way that can be worked out only with a computer. Cassati mathematically modeled the behavior of light passing through two layers of nonlinear material. The light changes the properties of the materials as it passes through, which in turn changes the behavior of light in complex ways. Thanks to this back-and-forth dance, the frequency of light that can pass through these materials depends on the direction of the light, he reported in the April 22nd issue of Physical Review Letters. Now, other people have used nonlinearity, but it use it in a different way, says Panayotis Kavrikidis. I think I said that right. Kavrikidis, a mathematical physicist at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, who was not involved in the research. Now, previous attempts to break down the reversibility of light use photonic crystals. Those materials can only block a portion of the light that has been boosted to twice its original frequency. Cassati's initial simulations describe a way to transmit about 80% of the light traveling in one direction while blocking out 70% of the light coming from the opposite direction. This selectivity could be used for making wave diodes. Just as a traditional diode allows electrical current to flow in only one direction in a piece of electronics, a wave diode could guide the flow of light in quantum or optical computing. This simple model may also apply to more general situations like acoustics or different kinds of waves, says Stefano Lepri, a physicist at the Italian National Research Council Institute for Complex Systems in Florence, and he was also a co-author of this study. Materials that respond to sound waves nonlinearly could, he suggests, be useful for one-directional soundproofing. And want to know other benefits of riding your bike? Well, listen to this. More physics news. How bicycles keep the rubber on the road. Engineers have been trying to explain the surprising stability of two wheels. Why? Well, listen to this. Bicycle abuse isn't something that you'd expect from the Dutch, but engineers in the Netherlands who love bikes enough to hurt them are challenging long-held beliefs about how a moving bike keeps its balance even when slap-shoved or otherwise insulted. The team has previously found unidentified factors that help a bike stay upright and has identified a slew of unusual designs that wouldn't have been thought to be stable. We believe there is room for improvement in the handling qualities of bikes, says Aaron Schwab, a professor of engineering mechanics at the Delft University of Technology. A conventional bicycle is remarkably stable when moving. Even without a rider, it can coast for long distances and catch itself from falling. As early as 1910, scientists credited this stability to the front wheel behaving like a gyroscope. As a spinning wheel leans, it should naturally swivel in the direction of the lean, guiding the bicycle into a curve that keeps it upright. In 1970, David E. H. Jones, then a spectroscopist at British chemical company ICI, tested this explanation by trying to build an unrideable bike. An extra wheel mounted to its frame spun backwards and canceled out the gyro effect. This bike was less stable but still rideable, even with no hands. Now, Jones looked for another stabilizing effect and found one similar to that which keeps the casters of shopping carts lined up. Hold a still bicycle by the seat, lean it to the side, and gravity turns the wheel. This trial effect based on the front wheel's position relative to the angle of the steer axis that connects the wheel to the handlebars. Move the wheel forward a few inches, Jones discovered, and a traditional bike becomes less stable. Published in Physics Today, the paper describes these experiments circulated widely and was read by a high school junior in Corvallis, Oregon, Jim Papadopoulos, a competitive cyclist who didn't understand the math at first, but later in graduate school, its conclusions would bother him. It took me 30 years to put my finger on the big flaw, he said, now an engineer at the University of Wisconsin Stout in Menomonee. Jones's paper wasn't based on the physics of something falling, but the physics of something being held, he says. Now, this man teamed up with the researcher from Cornell and a team in the Netherlands that built a bike with no gyroscopic or trail effects. Their riderless contraption, which sports two extra backwards rotating wheels and a front wheel that touches the ground in front of the steer axis, can still coast stably. Give it a smack, it curves, swerves, and recovers. You don't need a gyroscope or trail to make a bike self-stable, says Andy Ruina, a professor of mechanical engineering at Cornell and co-author of the paper describing the bike in the April 15th issue of Science. Bicycles, the team suggests, are more complicated than previously thought. Now, while gyro and trail effects can contribute to stability, other factors such as the distribution of mass and the bike's moment of inertia can play a role as well, of course. Computer simulations that take all of these factors into account could lead to improved designs for folding bikes with small wheels or bikes that carry cargo, Ruina says. To demonstrate the possibilities, the researchers sketched out several new exotic bicycle designs. One is predicted to remain stable, and even with a negative gyro that tries to turn a falling bicycle in the wrong direction, and another, the steer axis is reversed such that the handlebars are further away from the center of the front wheel. Now, they found a design with rear wheel steering that can be ridden and is self-stable, says David Gordon Wilson, a retired MIT professor who designed the modern recumbent bicycle in the early 1970s. That's quite amazing, he says. In the simulations, these new design principles still work when the weight of the human being is being added, but the real test is waiting out on the open road. The next step would be to study a bicycle with a rider in the real world, on actual roads, under varying conditions, on a fully instrumented bicycle, says Joel Fajans, a plasma physicist who also studies bicycles at the University of California, Berkeley, to find out how we really ride a bike. We'll be right back. American Association of Physical Anthropologists news, we have a few stories. There's footprints from the past. Volcanic ash near the shore of a Tanzanian lake preserves a snapshot of two groups of people from around 120,000 years ago. A team led by Kevin Hatala of George Washington University in Washington, D.C., discovered 349 preserved footprints of 34 Stone Age men, women, and children. At least 18 tracks, each containing three or more footprints from the same person, head in the same direction and represent a group that walked together, Hatala reported in Minneapolis on April 14th. Another six tracks heading in the opposite direction were made by individuals moving at various speeds from a walk to a run. And more about the Hobbit, and this keeps coming back in the news, Hobbit's dentistry. And they're contesting it. Signs of dental work found in Hobbit remains indicate that these finds come from a modern people, not a Stone Age Homo species, an anthropologist is asserting. Photographs and computerized tomography scans reveal tooth cavity damage and the remains of a filling substance around one hobbit tooth and a bone healing around an empty tooth socket in the same jaw that probably resulted from intentional tooth extraction. Mastiage Henneberg of the University of Adelaide in Australia reported in April 14th. Now, other scientists have said that no signs of dental work appear on hobbit teeth and jaws, so they are chewing on that one between the camps, and we'll wait and see what they decide on. Maybe they never will. You never know. Gibbons know the way. Gibbons living in a Thailand forest apparently formulate mental maps of their foraging areas and use the maps to direct routes between distant feeding locations, kind of like Gibbon Google Map. Over 55 days of study, 11 gibbon groups, each consisting of about four individuals, regularly traveled from one food patch to the next without substantially changing direction. Ulrich Rickard of Southern Illinois University in Carbondale reported in April 15th. Gibbons possess sophisticated knowledge of the forest's spatial layout, not just landmarks, resulting in a formidable sense of direction, Rickard has proposed. It looks like scientists are looking into more about nocturnal dinosaurs, as if velociraptors were scary enough. A new analysis of dinosaur-era skulls suggests that at least one of these bird-like predators, along with many of its ancient brethren, hunted by night. Not all extinct archosaurs, which are dinosaurs and their close relatives, love to bask in the sun. Like other animal groups, these ancient creatures were up at all hours, researchers from the University of California, Davis, reported online April 14th in Science. Just like modern mammals, predatory dinos seem to have preferred prowling in the night, while herbivores grazed during the day and into the evening. And we shouldn't be surprised that there were predatory dinosaurs skulking around in the shadows, says Lawrence Whitmer, a paleobiologist with University of Ohio in Athens. The surprising thing about this study is we could tell. The UC Davis team could tell nocturnal from daytime dinos by looking deep into their eyes. In living animals, that's easy. Nocturnal critters' eyes usually have wide pupils, for instance, but are relatively shallow. That means a cat's peepers let in lots of light, but can't take detailed pictures. Dino fossils, however, don't come with mushy eye tissue, so researchers have had the much harder task of inferring visual prowess from bones. Study co-authors Laura Schmitz, an evolutionary biologist, and Ryosuke Motani, a paleobiologist, started with living